All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, speaking to you from New York City on this, the 31st day of March, 2020. I do want to remind you, I write a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. You can sign up for that by going to miningstocks.com, miningstocks.com. You can also order a subscription by calling our office here in New York at 718-457-1426. Also like to encourage you to consider signing up for Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling? And, of course, Michael Oliver is with us today. He'll be talking to us. I always like to remind you it's olivermsa.com for all that Michael does to learn about his service and also to sign up for his great newsletter. We do want to thank all of you for listening to this show, making it one of the more popular shows on the Voice America Business Channel. We also like to encourage you to send along your questions, comments, whatever you might like to say about our show, send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. And last but not least, we want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Our sponsors for this week's show are in resources, Ely Gold Royalties, Great Bear Resources, Hannon Metals, Irving Resources, Lion One Metals, Novo Resources, and Sitka Gold Corp. Before I begin talking about today's show, I want to tell you that I did an interview with Eric Coffin yesterday, which you can listen to at jtaylormedia.com. I believe it's posted there now already. Eric commented on his investment strategies in the midst of this coronavirus epidemic. And he provided a couple of names that he thinks are in a great position to rocket to much higher levels as soon as things settle down with regard to the COVID-19 pandemic. Also, I would like to tell you that that on April 1st, I will be on a webinar along with Eric Coffin, Gwen Preston, and Brian London. That will be at 2 o'clock tomorrow. 2 o'clock Eastern Time, New York Time. To sign up for that, you can go to miningstocks.com. Go to miningstocks.com, scroll down the page a bit, and you'll see links to the webinar, to the Metals Investor Forum webinar. Click on that link, and you can sign up. It's free. It's free of charge, but it is a Metals Investor Forum event, and I'll be there along with Gwen Preston, Eric Coffin, and Brian London. Now, tomorrow, Eric plans to talk a little bit about liquidity and how that's wreaking havoc on the markets. Gwen plans to talk about how she thinks investors should approach these uncharted waters as an investor. And Brian will be talking about some macro-related issues that are impacting the gold markets and other markets. And, of course, I'll be talking about some of the things you hear about on this show on a regular basis. I've titled today's show, America's Fourth Turning and You. Doug Casey, Chris Taylor, and Michael Oliver are here today. Prior to the COVID-19 outbreak, Doug Casey recently opined on the ideas expressed in The Fourth Turning. That's a book written by William Strauss and Neil Howe, that America might be about to face some very major changes that will not be all that joyful, especially for the masses of people who are unprepared. As Machiavelli noted centuries ago, societies arise from poverty through moral strength, and that brings them prosperity. But that prosperity brings on arrogance, and that the arrogance brings on laziness, which brings on weakness and moral decline. Then they're reduced to a condition of slavery and poverty again. Change is the only constant except in human nature. In light of the financial disorders afflicting America and the Western world in general, perhaps more dangerously even than the coronavirus, I want to get Doug's opinion as to what might lie ahead for America and what's left of its middle class, what might actually transpire in the economy and change life as we've known it as Americans. That may be, in the end, as President Trump recently opined, more damage is caused because of economic havoc than from the coronavirus itself. Well, I'm really happy to have Chris Taylor with me today as well to talk about Great Bear and how it's coping with its exploration efforts considering the COVID-19 epidemic. And we'll find out from him how the drill program is going. They had a very aggressive drill program there and one of the most remarkable new gold discoveries in recent years there on their Dixie project. And so this is, I think, going to be really very interesting to hear what Chris has to say. That'll be right after our first commercial break. But right now, I'm happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with us to try to provide some guidance how we should be viewing these markets in light of all of the turmoil that's going on. Thanks for joining me today, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Michael, I'll just let you go. Talk about it. What should we be watching? I mean, you have been forecasting these kinds of events. Not with precise timing necessarily, but you have been warning us that the equity markets were destined for a major decline, not just a soft landing, but something that's going to be very significant. At the same time, you've been very, very bullish on gold and commodities. So just give us your update on what are your thoughts right now and what should people really be paying attention to?
Well, I think the people in the gold sector need to keep an eye on Mama Gold. And Mama Gold continues to go north. Now, there's sharp daily and weekly jolts to the downside, but if you stand back and look at it, since August of 2018, down around 1160 on gold, we've advanced. We had a congestion zone after a breakout that occurred in mid-2019, above that obvious mid-1300 level that had been resistance for five or so years. And we built a congestion zone there, August, September, October, November, December, and then we bolted upward again in January, February, March. January was a strong up month, above the highs of 2019. February was a slight down month. This month will settle up, new high monthly close for the move, not dramatically, but continue to persist on the upside. So just stand back and look at gold, especially on a monthly closing basis. Don't try to focus in on the day-to-day swings. And then think about, okay, well, a lot of folks in the gold sector thought, as the stock market broke down, oh, gold's going to collapse too. Why? Because they remembered one time that their correlation was in sync. That was the 2008 drop. That's back during a time when gold was both surging up with the stock market and pulling back with the stock market, though always surging stronger than the stock market. It was outperforming, but it still tended to zigzag with the stock market. I think their memory is too short. Don't just go back to the last time that when the stock market sold off, gold did. Go back 20, 30 years and look at the times when it didn't, okay? But anyway, this time it is not. Gold is advancing while the stock market is collapsing. Now, then we go to the junior things within the precious the monetary metal sector. The silver market, which did drop to a new low recently, though has bounced very sharply. It got into the 11s, it's now into the 14s, back above what had been the price low of 2016, which is like 1360. And GDX, which is the most popular ETF of the gold miners, dropped, but it didn't go anywhere near the 2016 lows, and it dropped into the 16s on GDX. This is after seeing price above 30, so it was a severe drop, and no doubt it felt just like it was part of the S&P. It's now trading around 24 in a matter of a week or two off the 16 low. So, you know, put that in perspective. You know, it's almost an $8 rally. That's a 50% gain from the low we made two, 3 weeks ago. Okay. Put that in perspective. I think that what's going on in the more emotional arenas of gold, not gold itself, but the miners and silver, is this sense that, oh, they're going to go with the stock market. So if the stock market rolls over again, which we think is better than even the odds that we haven't seen the low of this particular first leg of the bear market, will GDX and silver follow it down? What we think is going to happen probably in the commodity arena and is that there will be a separation in 2020. Right now, what we suspect on the S&P is that we haven't seen the low of this first drop. We saw a teasing low a week or so ago, just below 2,200 on the S&P. Our target zone stated early this year was a drop to 2,100 to 1,970. We didn't get into that zone. We got the 2,190. I suspect there's a chance we're going to get into that zone in the next drop, but that's only, you know, a handful of percentages below what we already saw. Mm-hmm. At that point, panic among the central banks is going to increase. They're already panicked. But if you take out the recent stock market low, they're going to think, oh, my goodness, all of the statements we've made, all the actions we've taken have not worked. Well, what does that mean? It means they're going to engage even more so than they have at this point. Now, that should help embolden, I think, the miners and silver. And I think the separation is going to become more and more obvious as the weeks go by here. I suspect strongly that the mining sector will not go down and take out that low we just saw, that spike low. And silver mm-hmm. probably wave goodbye to its low, which was just below 12, and will now advance. And I think that more and more as the weeks go by, we're going to see that silver and the miners tend to move more in line with gold than they have with the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the broad commodity category, we've frankly been wrong. We thought there was a bottom in the Bloomberg Commodity Index a few months ago. We had a rally that looked sufficient to say, okay, the light is green. But then oil and copper, particularly those two commodities, collapsed with the S&P. You know, those are the two most economically sensitive commodities, and they mm-hmm. consider to be, you know, like the S&P. Well, they dropped very hard. Copper did not make a new low versus its 2016 bear low, but crude oil did. And Bloomberg Commodity Index did, largely because of the energy complex. Grains did not. Grains have still maintained a sideways course. Gold certainly did not. It's making a new high monthly close for the move. So it's primarily the oil and copper that really brought the Bloomberg down, which looks mm-hmm. like the action of the S&P. What we think is probably going to happen there in the commodity complex is that over this year, as the S&P makes a low that's a tradable low, and I think that might be forthcoming in April.
Mm-hmm.
We go up for several months in the stock market. Everybody sighs relief, says, oh boy, you know, the crisis with the coronavirus is over at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And that issue lifts off the table and it's not an issue anymore. But all of a sudden, then the exposed problems mm-hmm. that we now are aware of, debt problems and so forth,
mm-hmm.
Become the forefront. Mm-hmm. At that point, after you've had a several-month stock market rally, and let's say a copper rally and an oil rally in sync again with the stock market, that's when asset managers are going to be looking at things like commodity assets, which are definitely at low levels historically, and commodity-related stocks. And they're going to be making a decision about, well, do I trust this stock market rally, or is it about time for me to move some assets out of that arena, which I didn't do at a proper time a month ago? You know, I think there's going to be a decision process among investors and asset managers, and I think during that process, we're going to see more of a shift toward commodities and less out of the U.S. stock market.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And at that point, more apparent that the miners will be joining gold at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly the miners did extremely well after 2008, 2009, eventually, and that happened when the Federal Reserve and other banks around the world started creating liquidity out of thin air, and Lord knows there's going to be more a need for liquidity out of thin air this time by far than there was in 2008, 2009. So, you know, we don't wish misery on anybody, but those of us who have seen the conditions being set up for this move, I suspect are more prepared for what's to come than many of the others. And, of course, the purpose of this show is to try to turn hard times into good times, and you do that by trying to understand what the fundamentals are. And I know, and I would like to just remind my listeners that you're giving your outlook for the markets, and that's not just putting a finger in the air and testing the direction of the wind, but that you actually have time-proven methodologies, proprietary methodologies that you've been using and I've been very impressed with, which is why we'd like to have you on as often as possible. It's MSA, OliverMSA.com, folks. to learn more about Michael and to sign up for his service. Thank you so much for being with us, Michael, and we'll look to talk to you in a couple of weeks from now.
Thank you, Jay. Bye-bye.
All right. All right, folks, so we do have to go to break, but don't go away because Chris Taylor is going to be with us with one of the most exciting new gold discoveries in recent years, the Dixie Project that Great Bear has. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Chris Taylor after a commercial break.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Auron Resources is an exploration company defined by its aggressive ambition to find the world's largest mines. Auron has raised over $100 million in this effort and believes it is on to three major discoveries at its projects in Canada and Peru. This year, Auron plans to drill Sombrero, where targets have analogous features to the 10th largest copper mine globally. The company also plans to drill its other substantial base and precious metal opportunities that management believes will be complemented by the strongest bull market in commodities over the last 50 years. Visit AURYNresources.com and subscribe to keep up with the busy year ahead.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really, really pleased to have with me Chris Taylor. I consider him a friend of mine now. He's heading up Great Bear Resources, which has had one of the more remarkable new gold discoveries of recent years, the Dixie Project in Ontario. They were on a very aggressive drill program. They just kept finding more gold. They stepped out, find more gold. And now they're starting to drill, do some infill drilling to put together a resource. But just a remarkable story. And then along comes this COVID-19 issue. And so we want to find out from Chris how things are going now that, that this scourge of COVID-19 is with us. Thanks for joining us today, Chris.
No problem, Jay. Very nice to speak with you again.
It's really good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we are actually drilling full steam ahead, as though, not quite as though the COVID situation was not present. That is not true. We've had to effectively take some serious measures to protect our working population. But by switching to all local labor in Red Lake, Ontario, we've managed to basically isolate all the employees and workers that we have from outside contact and keep the drills spinning. So our big exploration program is still going. And, oddly enough, although we were probably the second biggest drill program in Canada a month ago, today we are the biggest active drill program in the country because everybody else is shut down.
Wow. I know you had maybe the second largest, but so your workers are mostly local, and of course, Red Lake is, it's far away from Toronto or other major metropolitan areas, right? What's the closest to Red Lake? How big is Red Lake itself, the town?
Well, including laborers, workers that are in town, you're going to max out at about 7,000 people at any given time, and there's one highway that accesses the community. So it's actually a good situation for the local people. They can quite easily keep external visitors away. And there are travel restrictions in place, of course, across most of Canada, like there are across the United States right now. And that means that there are effectively no out-of-town visitors in that area. But you do have a mining conscious experienced labor pool living there. So we are able to monopolize the local labor and keep the drills turning.
Is there a hospital there? A small hospital, at least I would imagine, with 7,000 people, there must be some medical facility.
Yeah, of course. It's just that the number of bed spaces there is so limited that you definitely, the best solution for a small community like Red Lake is simply to keep infected people away. And that way they can keep their lives moving along as normally as possible.
Right. But they are, I suppose, testing, hopefully, in case something does spring up that they could isolate people, whoever is infected, I suppose. Hopefully it doesn't happen.
Correct.
But we're seeing across in the United States, of course, the spread is all throughout the country for the most part. And there are some isolated areas, but for the most part. Well, it's really good to know. I mean, you are very unusual then. I know a lot of the drilling programs have been cut back substantially. I think in Quebec, they shut down the mining industry entirely. What about labs? Are the labs operating, the ones that you use?
Yeah, Jay, and that was one of the concerns we had. Even if we were able to keep the drill spinning, it doesn't do you a lot of good to drill the rock and then not be able to determine how much gold is in it. So certainly the labs that we use have been, they've had to take some steps to consolidate operations and make sure there are fewer people working around each other, but they're still working as well. So from us, from a landscape of hundreds of companies that are working like we are, right now we're down to just a handful. And, it should be a good position for Great Bear because we can keep producing news throughout this cycle. And I think, you know, given the way I expect gold to react on the back of all this, quantitative easing, I guess, a.k.a. printing money that's going to have to go on here, I think gold long-term will probably react quite well. And companies like ours and Great Bear who are able to continue expanding their gold discovery and continuing with news flow in the market. I mean, we have a better chance than many to, benefit our shareholders through that ongoing activity.
Yeah. Well, we haven't heard of any drill results for some time. Might we expect some soon? I know there are some companies that I've talked to have said, yeah, we have some results, but who's going to pay attention right now? We're just holding on to them. But might we expect some results sometime soon?
Yes, I would say so. In our case, we're confident we've been drilling continuously since our last news about a month ago, and that means that we're finally getting enough assays back from the lab. And remember, the labs are working at reduced capacity, but they're still working. But we have enough results coming together now that I would expect news in the near future. And the drilling continues to go well. So, this is where we have an opportunity for, the people that are interested in diversifying holdings, their investment holdings into the gold space specifically. I think companies like ours stand to benefit from sort of a generalist investor turnover. I think there's going to be some diversification in investment interest coming up here on the back of all this COVID-19 situation.
All right. Well, I want to ask you about the plans to spin out shareholders into a royalty company. But before we get to that, I'm just wondering if you could sort of refresh our memory again in your existing drill program, what the objectives of that program are.
Okay, that's a great point, Jay. Well, it looks like what Great Bear has found is one of the largest new gold discoveries in many years. I know that's a very broad and promotional sounding statement, but for instance, out of this large LP fault discovery, we've got gold drilled over 4 to 5 kilometers. So this is something like about 2 to 3 miles long. Every drill hole that we've put into that thing, and that's getting to be on the order of over 100 drill holes now, has hit gold without fail. And that's amazing to think that that is one zone that we're drilling off. So what we're going to do is continue drilling what looks to be what the industry calls a tier one discovery. And by tier one, the mines around the world that are characterized as tier one mines, these tend to be operations that can produce say, 500,000 ounces of gold a year for a period of 10 years or more. And this is really, we still need to drill to prove that this is what we have found. Obviously, this is a discovery that we only made 9 or 10 months ago, so it's still early days, but it's looking very good. And if Great Bear is sitting on a Tier 1 type discovery, the parallel discoveries like this have been, they've certainly netted very large amounts of value for the groups that had them, to the tune of billions of dollars frequently. So right now, you know, Great Bear is it's a relatively small company, a couple $100 million market cap in U.S. dollars. But you're looking at parallel discoveries have almost exclusively made up the core assets of the big mining companies in the world. And that's our goal here, is to continue drilling, ensuring that's the case, because if it is, it should be a value proposition to the tune of you know, multiples of what we're currently looking at as a company. So we want to keep that going. And to get to your question about the royalty spin-out, the basis of some of the most successful royalty companies in the world have been royalties that are owned on these Tier 1 assets. So if we are one of those, then the value of the royalty spin-out that we're undertaking now should be, you know, quite substantial, potentially, similar to what the company itself is worth at the moment.
All right. Talk to us about the spin-off plans, because you did put some news out just yesterday about that. I own some shares. How many? What is the record date? What record date do you think it will be that will determine whether you get some shares in the spin-out?
Well, if you're a shareholder of Great Bear, the mining company or the exploration company, around the end of April, so say around the 28th of April or so, you will be receiving shares of the royalty spin-out company.
Okay. All right. And any more information? I think I saw something like one out of one for four or something like that. So if I had 1,000 shares of Great Bear, I'd get 250 or something like that. Is that the ratio you're looking at?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jay. Let give us an opportunity to keep the share structure of the new royalty company tight. That's like keeps your powder dry for future transactions and growth. But at the same time, you want to fairly reward, in a sense it's a bit of a dividend, you want to reward the shareholders of Great Bear and distribute the value, the future value of that royalty directly to them instead of to some other company. You know, you don't have a crystal ball. It could be possible, you know, based on the size of the discovery that we've made, that ultimately the project gets purchased by another entity, gets mined by another entity. But this is a way that we're protecting that future revenue stream value for our shareholders in Great Bear.
Right. And it does have to get shareholder approval. I think 2/3 of the shares have to be voted in favor. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So there'll be a meeting at about the end of April where, you know, we'll receive the votes from everybody. Effectively, the people that get to vote were the shareholders on March 16th. It's just regulatory requirements. There needs to be a lag there. Then we tally up the votes around the end of April. And effectively, if you're a shareholder at the end of April and it's approved by the voting population, then effectively you'll get the spin-out shares. You know, for every 4 shares of Great Bear that you own, you'll get 1 share of the royalty company.
All right. Well, it's certainly one of the things, one of the reasons that I wanted to hang on to my shares, you know, for the long term, of course, but this was really something that I found very attractive, the idea of this spin out, because I do believe that you're onto a very major discovery, Chris, and it should be worth a lot going forward. And I think there have been some, you know, some pretty substantial royalty companies that have been born out of situations like this. So I think this is really exciting. I guess existing shareholders that are listening to this should make sure that they vote on this issue, right? By proxy or however.
Yeah, the feedback that we've received from the majority of shareholders has been extremely positive. I think everybody recognizes that it's management's intention to reward our shareholders specifically for, you know, what's effectively a very unusual and very exciting gold discovery. So, again, let's make sure that it's Great Bear shareholders that benefit from this over the long term. And certainly, if the project materializes the way we think it is, there's a lot of upside to be expected on the exploration side as well, even well after this spin-out occurs.
Oh, definitely. Well, it is really exciting. I'm very proud to have you as a sponsor to the show, and I'm very very pleased to own shares myself and to have. I think maybe Gwen Preston beat me onto this story, or maybe Eric Coffin. I don't know. I don't care who, but we got our subscribers in early, and it's been a very nice ride, notwithstanding some of the bumps along the way, like the ones we're experiencing now. I do note that they think March 16th is a date that you could vote. The shares that you own was a day when the stock got hit pretty hard. So I'm having an idea that a lot of investors probably got triggered out on that very day. But somebody was buying the shares, but it's going to be interesting. You think it's pretty likely that you'll get a favorable vote, I guess, then probably, right, Chris?
Oh, yeah. No, it's been exclusively positive feedback that we've received, almost exclusively positive feedback from especially the more sophisticated investors that understand the potential value of what they're getting. At the moment, it's not potentially worth that much, but the future value is very substantial. And that's up to us. The continued success from Great Bear Exploration as we continue to drill will build in the value of that royalty over time.
Okay, one more thing then. I believe you're well-funded to continue your drill program through the end of this year. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct, Jay. Great Bear doesn't need to raise more money until sometime in 2021. We can continue drilling over the intervening time period without pause, and that puts us in a much better footing given the context of the market. I think I'd like to see some additional value built into the story before we issue any more stock.
Absolutely. Well, it's very exciting. Thank you so much, Chris, for being with us, and we'll look to keep up with things going into the future. Thank you so much. All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because Doug Casey will be with us. I think he'll have some very interesting things to say about the gold markets and a lot of other socioeconomic aspects to COVID-19 and the economic picture that isn't looking all that bright for fiat currency going forward. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Doug Casey.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSX and GTBDF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their 23-kilometer, wholly-owned Dixie project in the prolific Red Lake mining district of Ontario. Having recently made multiple high-grade gold discoveries, GBR is fully funded to complete a very active 200,000-meter drill program through to the year 2021. Stay up to date on what has been considered one of the best performing exploration stocks in the last 2 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Doug Casey with me once again. Now, if you're a gold-oriented investor, you already know who Doug is. He has had a remarkable track record as an author, investor, and speaker, and a more complete bio is available on this show's webpage, Voice America Business Channel. But suffice it to say that you are in for a real treat over the next 20 minutes or so in listening to what Doug has to say. He's always an entertaining speaker, and he also brings with him a great deal of experience and wisdom. So thank you so much for joining me, Doug.
Thanks, Jay. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm speaking to you from the backward but pleasant little country of Uruguay at the moment.
Are you in the mountains? Is it a...
No, I'm at the beach, actually.
Oh, at the beach. Okay, but you're...
On a farm near the beach.
And I think you said you're there with horses and cows and dogs and cats and a few of the people that help you and work with you there. Mm-hmm. So you like your place in Cafayate in Argentina is kind of an isolated place too. You enjoy being sort of isolated from all of the riffraff, or what is it, Doug? I mean, you like to be where you feel safe. I know you're a great reader. You're a great intellectual, so you like to think and read and so forth. So I guess for you, living in a place where you don't have hundreds and thousands of people crowded around you is a delight, I suppose.
Well, look, I'm very happy being alone with a bunch of books and the internet. I don't need to be surrounded by millions of people. And of course, this recent hysteria about the virus has underlined the fact that having millions of people around you can be a risk, can be a danger. Although I hasten to add that the virus is 95% hysteria.
Wow, that's quite a statement, because we're inundated with this need to make sure that we don't leave our houses and we stay put. And how serious it is, and how it's going to wipe out humanity if we're not careful. Tell me why all this stuff I'm hearing is wrong.
Okay. Look, in the last 20 years, we've had swine flu, we've had bird flu, we've had HIV, we've had a number of other things besides. Viruses come and go. They reach a peak and then they go away. Now, the most serious thing in the way of a pandemic that we've had for over 100 years was the Spanish flu in 1918 and 1919.
Mm-hmm.
It's said that it killed about 600,000 Americans. Okay? That would be roughly the equivalent of 1.8 million Americans dying today.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that happened, during the time it happened, there was a minor recession in the country, mostly due to the demobilization from World War I and the distortions that adventure created.
Mm-hmm.
And life went on. So today, with much more advanced knowledge of medicine, this is a big nothing burger. Okay, so the number of people that are going to die, it's unfortunate. But as what's happened in Italy, the average age of people that are said to have died from the coronavirus in Italy is about 80. So if you're not really old and not really sick, you're probably pretty safe. But in just the normal seasonal flu, like a tenth of a percent of the people that get it die.
Mm-hmm.
So this is hysteria. This is actually looked at from a historical point of view. The only thing I can think of that's comparable to this is the 17th century witch hysteria. I mean, it's actually that insane that the entire economy of the world is being collapsed just on another flu virus. More serious than most, I'm sure, but just another one. So, no, I discount it heavily. And I'm not here in the middle of nowhere on a farm hiding from the flu. I'm here because I'd be here anyway, and I enjoy it. So that's where I stand on.
All right. Well, that's very interesting, and I think it ties in very well with what I wanted to talk to you today about the fourth turning. So back in 1918, you didn't have the government doing what the government's doing today. Do you think that has something to do with the place that America is right now in that fourth turning? And maybe before you answer that, give our listeners a little bit of an overview, those that haven't read the book, what the fourth turning is all about.
Well, it's not my book. It was done by Howe and Strauss,
mm-hmm.
but it's an excellent book. And I recommend that people read not only the fourth turning, but the book that they wrote before that called Generations. And basically, it's a generational theory of history. It's well known that generations tend to go from being liberal to conservative to back to liberal again and so forth. Okay, that's all true. But what they've done is they've they figured out that there are actually four generational types. And I don't want to go into that so much mm-hmm. because it's their theory, not mine. I think it's a correct theory, basically. But the way I want to put these what's going on today into context is that Western civilization itself, I think, peaked just before World War I. In other words, it peaked in about 1914. And it's been going downhill since then. All the values that made the West, as great as it is, are being washed away at an accelerating rate. And every time there's a major crisis, financial, political, what have you, and in this case, medical, or I'd say faux medical, it gives the government more of an opportunity to grasp power. Mm-hmm. The kind of people that go into government are the kind of people that aren't so interested in controlling physical reality as they are controlling other people. Mm-hmm. So this is a wonderful thing from the point of view of the kind of people that go into government. A disaster from the point mm-hmm. of view of the average guy, traditional Americans. But this is really serious. The flu is not the serious thing. It's the knock-on effects of the flu. The business collapse that's happening as a result of the hysteria, and even more important than those second-order effects are the third-order effects, which are what the government's doing. They're going to set up new agencies. There are going to be new taxes, new regulations. Listen, I wouldn't doubt that they're going to say that everybody has to be vaccinated when they come up with some kind of a flu vaccination. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, you can't fly and God knows what else. The possibilities are endless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's appealing to those that are seeking power, for sure. But then I'm wondering if the American people then at this stage in history are more susceptible than they would have been in 1913, 1914, that time frame earlier than that. Of course, it was 1913, thereabouts the time when we had the Fed. The Fed was created to protect who? To protect, I guess, to protect J.P. Morgan. But the idea was to protect all of us, right? And the IRS was there to help us as well, supposedly. I mean, that's how it was sold to us.
Sure, they're all lies. Look, back then, Americans were much more independent. Freedom was much more of a real concept. And these things have become very, very degraded over time, where the government has gone from being just a distant power that was in Washington and did some things from time to time, like start the war between the states, where now it's an overweening influence in every aspect of our lives. It's the average American views the government as a cornucopia where everything comes from. Money, food, orders, leadership, everything. This is a very disturbing trend. I don't know how it's going to end, but it's going to end badly.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible when you think about it. Where do you know the idea that government has endless amounts of resources? They believe it. I believe they. I mean, our universities are not teaching people anything to do with economics. If it, any economics, it's all Marxist stuff, right? I mean, it's easy to understand how we have an AOC here in not far from where I live here in Queens. You know, they've all been educated along those lines.
You're absolutely correct. The cultural Marxists have long since taken over the education system in the U.S., especially the universities, but even the high schools and the grade schools. And kids go to school and they're indoctrinated with all of these poisonous ideas. So it's only natural that when they get out into the world, they believe the things that they were taught by authority figures. And their parents believe the same things because they were taught the same things. So I think the battle, I hate to sound defeatist, but frankly, the good guys have lost. And it's a real pity. And compounding this is what's happened in the financial markets, where since the last crisis of 2008 to 2010 was kind of solved by printing up trillions and trillions of currency units, creating a bubble in stocks, a hyper bubble in bonds, reinflating the bubble in real estate. And now the average guy is very involved in all these things. And he's going to be washed away financially. And so what's he going to do? Well, he's going to look to the government to bail him out and to kiss everything and make it better. So this is, look, there's almost no way out of this conundrum at this point. It's very bad news. I'm sorry to sound so gloomy, Jay.
Well, it is the truth. I have no doubt about that. And in an interview that you did recently, you noted that Machiavelli had figured this out centuries ago. In fact, and yet we don't learn, do we? What is it with the human race that we can't learn from history? I mean, the definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And yet that's what we're doing. I mean, just talk about the financial situation, about the Federal Reserve. Every cycle they print more money and we just dig ourselves deeper into a hole. And now we have negative interest rates and God knows what's going to happen. That is just like trying to fool Mother Nature with negative interest rates. It's just it's insane. How can we have capitalism if we're not allowed to price capital? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, we don't have capitalism to start with. We actually have what's technically known as fascism, where there is private ownership of both capital goods and consumer goods, but the government regulates and controls it all. So, no, we don't have capitalism. It's a mistake to confuse what we have with capitalism.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter which party's in power. They're both sold out to this this scam.
Oh, it's
endemic.
It is. It's a mass dramatization of psychological aberrations that are common to humans. I mean, increasingly, I'm starting to view my fellow humans as a bunch of chimpanzees gathered around a watering hole, and it's really easy to get them hooting and panting. I just hope we don't make the Chinese into our new enemy. Seems like things are lining up that way, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When things get bad domestically, governments like to find a foreign enemy to blame it all on. Mm-hmm. And this virus is perhaps as good an excuse as any. I'm sure that a lot of people in the U.S. military right now are thinking pretty much the way the Russian military thought back in the mid-80s. Gee, if we don't strike now, we may be too late to strike soon and certain to lose the war. So that's why we came so close to World War III back in the 80s when the Soviet Union was on the point of falling apart. And at this point, the bloated U.S. military and the U.S. state generally is, it's possible we can have a war. But I think World War III, wars have not been abolished, is likely to have a very, very big biological element. In other words, why use nuclear weapons or things like B-2s and F-35s and M1 tanks? This stuff is all junk, just expensive junk. Mm-hmm. When a virus, I'm not saying this virus, the virus is what's going on, but when the war comes, it'll definitely have a biological nature. It's cheap. It has plausible deniability. It can be directed genetically towards certain groups. Leaves all the capital standing. You don't have to blow it up.
Yeah,
I mean, it's got all kinds of advantages. So that's, of course, what they're going to do. And the U.S. government has been working on biological weapons for decades. And you can rest assured that other countries have, too.
Right, for sure. Well, but how? Okay, so maybe that's a cheaper way too. I mean, I was going to ask you, what about the ability to finance this? And I mean, as long as the rest of the world is willing to accept dollars, but I think there's signs, Doug, that right now there's less of a tendency for American or for foreigners. I mean, Alistair McLeod's been talking about how the export net export countries are not recycling their dollars back into treasuries at the very time when the U.S. Treasury needs are greater than ever, when the borrowing is going just absolutely berserk and exponential, and yet foreigners aren't coming in, so there's nobody left but the Fed to print. Who's going to buy anyway? Who wants to buy treasuries at zero interest rates? So how do we finance something like that? I mean, the war is to be financeable. I guess maybe that's another reason for biological weapons. It might be a lot cheaper than, as you say, you leave the capital intact, right? So,
yeah, that's right. But it's a real problem that the U.S. government has come up against with the dollar. It's that they're spending trillions now. I mean, trillions. The deficit isn't just going to be a trillion, not 2 trillion.
No.
Going to be 3 or 4 trillion. And as the depression, and we have started on a depression, incidentally, gets worse, they're going to spend more money and they're going to have less income from taxes. So the only way they can get money is by selling it to the Federal Reserve, which credits their accounts at commercial banks, and then the government dispenses it as it wishes. So this is going to devastate the average American who's on a fixed pension in dollars, people that have savings in dollars, people that are in the stock market, because I think the stock market's got a long way to fall. But the real paper bubble, the real danger, is in the bond market.
For sure.
I mean, we're head over heels in debt, and that debt's going to be defaulted on directly or indirectly. And that's a real problem for the people that own the debt. In other words, people that own treasury bills and other kinds of bonds. In an urbanized society, such as we have now, where everything is just in time, if you don't have capital, you don't have savings, everything could come unglued.
Mm-hmm. Very rapidly, and then you're totally dependent on the government. Well, let me ask you, Doug, with just about 3 minutes left here or so, can the dollar remain as the world's reserve currency, and what's going to take its place if it can't remain?
No, the dollar is on its way out rapidly. It's no longer going to be the world's currency. The Chinese and the Russians in particular have been big gold buyers. Why? They have, even when the Chinese trade with the Russians, they have to use dollars. Because they don't trust the yuan or the ruble between themselves. They use dollars. But all those dollars have to clear through New York and settle in the U.S., even between these two countries that are big adversaries of ours. So what's happening is you're going to find in the future a gold-backed ruble, a gold-backed yuan, but all the world is going to go back to gold because none of them trust each other's funny money currencies. No, the dollar is on its way out. So the answer to the question is, the only thing that really makes sense for the average guy or the guy with a lot of money is to buy gold today, buy gold coins. And right now, as a speculation, gold stocks are superb. A lot of money. All these fund managers are going to pile into them. We're going to get a bubble in gold stocks next. I'm convinced of it.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. That we're hearing stories right now, Doug, though, that it's very difficult to take delivery of gold. A lot of the buyers are having trouble. What do you make of that? And how much good is gold going to be to us? If everything around us, if we can't buy food, if we can't buy items, and things that we have to have for life itself.
Well, gold is the only financial asset that is not simultaneously somebody else's liability. And that's very important in a time when you can't trust the currency. As far as having food and other things that you want, look, even in countries with crappy currencies where the economy is collapsing, like Venezuela or in particular right across the Plate River from where I am in Argentina, where I spend a lot of time. Life still goes on. Mm-hmm. But it's going to turn out that the people that have gold in the future are going to have real wealth that they're going to be able to trade for whatever kind of new currency the government comes up with. And incidentally, since the 1930s, when both Argentina and Brazil had gold standards and had gold coins circulating among the population, since then, both of them have had about five or six different currencies mm-hmm. that have been destroyed in sequence. But life goes on. So,
yeah, life goes on. All right.
It may be a police state, yeah. but life will go on.
Life goes on. All right. Well, Doug, for people that, I mean, most people know who you are, but how can they follow what you're doing? They get on a mailing list?
Well, thank you, Jay. I always appreciate a commercial of that type. They should go to internationalman.com. Okay. We have, it's a free newsletter that comes out daily, and the articles are really excellent.
They are excellent.
Yeah, they're very different from all kinds of things. So go to internationalman.com. And I would also urge people, since I'm finishing the third book in my septet of novels, go to Amazon and get a copy of Speculator and Drug Lord, the first two novels in the series. I'm completing Assassin as we speak.
All right. Look forward to it. When you finish it, we'll have you on again to talk about that, Doug. Thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your very unique views. Very much appreciated. Thank you so much. Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this week. Next week, Rick Rule will be with us, and I think John Rubino as well will join me. So until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Lion One Metals, one of 2019's top-performing gold stocks, is geared for aggressive growth in 2020. With drilling underway at its fully permitted high-grade Tuvatu Gold Project in Fiji, one of the last high-grade gold deposits of its kind anywhere in the world, not owned by a major gold mining company, Lion One trades in the USA on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF and in Canada under LIO on the TSXV. To learn more about Lion One's world-class high-grade gold potential in Fiji, go to liononemetals.com.